Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue, February 11th. We have one item on our agenda, an informational meeting, presentation, and then time for committee discussion about tax expenditures. Mr. Allen.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So this is kind of a follow-up on the Department of Revenue's presentation, I think last week, on their tax expenditure report. And one of the issues that was raised were implicit sunsets. And so this is just a continuation of that topic and trying to give the committee an opportunity to think about and talk about a little bit more on issues related to tax expenditures. So the starting point here is, what is the intent of the book? So you have that book. It's about 400 pages long, so it's not exactly a quick read. And it's kind of a digest of tax policy. And it's almost an inverse of tax policy, where we can talk about what the state taxes. So we're going to tax income, we're going to tax property. And this is a catalog, if you will, of things that the state does not tax. So it provides kind of an inverse view of tax policy. So keeping that in mind about what is the intent of the book and what provides the most value to the legislature. And that information can be set in any number of ways. Right now we have this report, and statute identifies the information that needs to be included. And it's had this structure for 25 years or so. And different people find it useful to differing degrees. But that's the overarching principle, is what would be useful to you as a committee in understanding tax expenditures and modifying those policies going forward. And then how should that information be conveyed? We have the book. There can be different tables. At different points, the Department of Revenue has put up on their website perhaps the PDF reports or even Excel spreadsheets, where they have linked these tax expenditures to policy programs, be that economic development, education. So it gives the user some way of parsing through all of these provisions. There are 368 provisions across the tax programs. So that's a lot of information. What are the ways that can make it more that we can make it more accessible to you? And then we also have the authority to define what is and what is not a tax expenditure. And the few slides I'm going to get to here in a minute really highlight this question, and that has come up for the first time in this session, related to a culmination of laws being passed over time and basically going from what had been an academic discussion to what is or is not a tax expenditure. Because even within that, you'll have the realm of either a lot of things are tax expenditures, or objection to the concept of a tax expenditure. So it's not a foregone, everybody's on the same page as to what is or isn't. And prior, it had been an academic discussion, but we're getting into some practical impacts with taxpayers and their potential interaction with the Department of Revenue. So just to refresh the timeline here, in 1995, the tax expenditure report became a required document. The legislation was passed and signed into law, requiring the Department of Revenue to produce the report. Or more specifically, it required the governor to cause the report to be produced, and it's a companion to the governor's budget. Tax expenditures as a concept probably came onto the landscape in the early 70s at the federal level. And 20 years later, different states have different kinds of reports. Some reports are very detailed, like ours. Others, there's just a listing of the title and then the impact. So then we get to 2009. That was a year where, at the time, it was still considered a 3/5 vote to end any subtraction or any tax expenditure, to end a tax credit or exemption or deduction. And placing a sunset on a provision would have required a 3/5 vote. And at the time, there were about 65 income tax credits. And the legislature, there's a bill in that session, House Bill 2067, that took all of these income tax credits, or nearly all of them, there were a couple of exceptions, and put them into one of three bins for a review process, and created a uniform sunset date. Some of them were sunset in 2012, 2014 and 2016, and so now we've gotten onto this two-year cycle for the tax credits.
Yes, Representative Roeschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chris, do we have an outline or just kind of a rough, since it's a six-year cycle on most of these, and you have two, do we have like 40% in the first bucket and 30% and 30%, or is it 60% of tax credits and 20 and 20, or how's that, what's that distribution look like?
In 2009, it was roughly a third, a third, a third.
Okay.
We have moved away from that as a couple of tax expended credits have been created and many have been allowed to sunset.
Okay.
This time around, the legislature in the tax credit report that Kyle put together, there are nine that are sunsetting this session.
Okay.
And we can get you that full list. We keep a running list of that.
Yeah, I guess what I'd like to see is try to keep it third, third, third. And if we're out of balance, see what we can do to maybe push those back again so that there isn't a particular biennium where we're just inundated with having to review tax credits and the other two not. So
part of the intent, I guess, for more background, in 2009 was to create three very broad policy buckets.
Mm, okay.
And to the extent that worked, some of it worked out pretty well and others, not so well. And as we move forward, we've gotten away, I think, from that third, a third, a third. So there is the policy bucket, there's an even distribution, and then even some of them, there's an issue for some tax credits where it can be problematic to be reviewing the tax credit in the year that it sunsets. And those, the legislature has considered reviewing those early. So you'd review, and those would be, roughly speaking, anything that involved a fair amount of investment. So if the private sector is going to be doing some investment, they need a fair amount of lead time for those things. So, but we can get you the list, and that can be another next step of discussion.
Thank you.
And then from 2009 through 2013, we had the sunset process for the tax credits. And that's when the legislature started roughly taking the sunsets, drafting bills that just extended, moved the sunset out 6 years, assigned them to policy committees, and created this Joint Committee on Tax Credits or Tax Expenditures process. In 2013, this six-year sunset on tax credits, which was an automatic provision, so if the legislature didn't specify a sunset date, then it had this automatic sunset, what we sometimes refer to as an implicit sunset. And then 2013, that process was expanded to all tax expenditures. So just away from the income tax credits to all tax expenditures. So now we have a point where we have this automatic or implicit that's in the background for the legislation. So in 1995, just some of the language here, and we get into the definitions that really play a key role, and the Department of Revenue was touching on this the other day, that the definition of a tax expenditure, just focusing on the highlighted part there, is any law of the federal government or this state that exempts something from the impact of established taxes. And as they pointed out the other day, the established taxes isn't defined. So if we're talking about the income tax embedded in that, are we talking about a 5%, 7%, and 9% rate structure? So if we deviate from that, is that the normal or the established tax? Or if we ran into this a little bit with corporate taxation and the apportionment formula. And as we move from a double-weighted sales formula to a single sales formula, is that the creation of a tax expenditure? Or what is the established tax? Is it a system that has a double-weighted formula or a single-weighted formula? So that's not entirely clear. And then even the Legislative Revenue Office was affected by this in the same bill, 2255, we had a role in providing some input about the tax expenditure report. So the subsequent legislation, the House Bill 2067 in 2009, added this provision. So any tax credit that was created on or after January 1, 2010 would have a maximum six-year lifespan unless specified otherwise. And that's where we get into this implicit sunset. Now that's just for tax credits. And then in 2013, this is the expansion of that automatic or implicit sunset of 6 years for any tax expenditure. but enacted on or after January 1, 2014. So we still have a lot of provisions that don't have a sunset date, either through the Federal Connect or all of the provisions that were created before this time period.
Did you have a question?
You may have just answered it there at the end, which was going to be my, so does that include all of the kind of the big federal? So according to this language, no, it's only an expenditure that is passed by the legislature since 2014.
Yeah, and the dates are the key thing there. So for tax credits, it's been since 2010, and for other tax expenditures, it's 2014. Okay. And so for the federal ones, you have the primary deductions there, the home mortgage interest, property tax, those have been around for a long time. They don't have any sunset. And the conversation can get even a little more complicated about the federal provisions, because if you're going through the book and you're looking for the statute reference, users will notice they all pretty much have the same statute reference, and that's our tie to federal law. So when we tie to federal law, we are picking up all of the federal tax expenditures through one provision of ours. Now, the legislature can choose its connection point and has some policy decisions there. Senate Finance and Revenue is taking up that discussion right now currently. They're kind of going through where we tie, where to what point in the federal law do we connect, and is that a static or rolling reconnect? One of the arguments for that is the simplicity and tying to federal definitions and federal law, and knowing that whatever happens to the feds, federal level affects us. We do pick up there, but embedded in that is that we pick up their tax expenditures. And so those are reported in the book. And that's an example of how useful that information may be for the assembly and the committee. Does that need to be included in the report the same way that the provisions that are in Oregon statute are included? And it's not a black and white in that they're either included or not. You know, there can be summary tables, the information could be presented in different ways. But most of the provisions don't have a sunset.
Seeing no other question, I'll jump into this and I'd like to explore this a little further. So we're looking at a lot of tax credits, but we're not looking at a lot of other kinds of things that are tax expenditures. And given that the legislature has said very proactively about tax credits, we want to review the usefulness of these instruments for providing incentives, either rewards or trying to influence some behavior or mitigate for something that we think is an undue burden or hardship. We've said for income tax credits, we want to be able to routinely review them all every certain number of years, 6 years in this case, to see if they still have the same intended effect, if they're working, if they're not, is it time to get rid of it? Maybe it needs some sideboards because we don't need it as much. But we're not doing it for everything else. So should we? There are a lot of things that I think people think are, of course, a good idea and still a good idea. There are others that I've heard people say, well, you need sideboards on that because it's too much. You don't need to do that much of it. So for me, it's partly just that fundamental question, is it time to raise the question, should we be reviewing other kinds of tax expenditures? And then to what end? Is there a way to, is there something in between keeping it or killing it where you use some kind of sideboards that would involve either eligibility or the amount of the credit? I'm just wondering if anyone else on the committee has been thinking about other things other than tax credits. Representative Smith.
I would share with you, Madam Chair, without being too bold, that's the purpose of this committee, is for us to ask those questions and to review those type of items. And in my view, all those should be on the table as a conversation.
I wonder how we would initiate getting them on the table, possibly through a bill that's been introduced, asking LRO to study this and tell us.
That is a big conversation, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Yeah. So where does one start? Yeah. Let's go keep going through this.
So on the going down the sunset path, and the way that's playing out in statute, getting back to this academic discussion to practical impact and these implicit sunsets, I have a couple of examples that highlight some of the complexities here, or hopefully highlighted. So example one here is the earned income tax credit, and it has what I would say is a clear sunset date in statute. I haven't put up the whole statute because I'm trying to highlight just the sunset date. So a taxpayer, you can go to 315-266 and you can find out the earned income tax credit, and it's either an 8% credit or 11% credit of the federal one. And then below the statute, highlighted in yellow there, it's clear that it applies only to tax years beginning on or before January 1, 2020. So this is what we would call an explicit sunset, because you can go to the statute that creates the tax expenditure and it has the sunset date. And this is actually one of the ones that's up for review this session. So that's what we would refer to as an explicit sunset date, and it seems pretty straightforward and clear. Example two, this is one related to employee training, and it goes through some definitions around a qualifying county, and then a tax credit is allowed to a taxpayer who establishes an employee training program, and there's sideboards in it, and they're not all listed there, kind of the 4 through 10, there's a lot of information in there that puts sideboards and describes that tax credit. But nowhere in statute is a sunset date. Now this one was implemented in, I think, 2015, so it's subject to the automatic sunset date. So that creates a layer of complexity where you can go to 315.523, you can find out about the credit, but unless you know about this other part of statute, it's not obvious that it sunsets. And to their credit, the Department of Revenue and the Tax Expenditure Report, they add language. I think it's something, this might be boilerplate for every one of these, but I just grabbed this one. Basically saying that it doesn't explicitly identify a sunset date, but presumably given when it started, it'll sunset in 2022. And this is, now we've created a situation where to understand the full, all of the sideboards of the parameters, we have to link together two statutes.
Representative Marsh. Thank you, Chair. So this passed in 2015, you said?
I believe so, yeah.
So do we have any idea why we didn't just insert into the tax credit? I mean, that was clearly after the point where we knew we wanted to do every six-year reviews. Shouldn't we just be trying to put that language in every tax credit that we put into play?
Ostensibly, that would be the argument.
So this was just essentially an oversight?
Probably. I mean, We can get to the end of the session and things are moving quickly, and I'd have to do a little more digging if this was in a bill and then got added to, I think it got added to the tax credit omnibus bill at the last minute. And these are the kinds of details. But it is up to the legislature could have decided that this one had a 8-year sunset or a 3-year sunset. But just the fact that if it was an oversight, or maybe even knowing that we had this automatic sunset,
right,
that it wasn't that big of a deal, not to put words in anybody's mouths, but knowing that that backstop was there, which was kind of the intent of the backstop, but it creates this implicit, this is one of the consequences that we've been getting to now.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would also point out on this, it looks like a very narrowly targeted credit, because it's only qualifying county is between 60,000 and 80,000 people, which of course makes me want to see a list of all the counties by their population. So I know it's not Multnomah or Marion but it's probably not Baker either.
It's not Baker, Mountain, right? Or Grant Hardy or Lake.
Right.
I think it's Klamath.
I think it is Klamath.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Shoot.
And any county that begins with the letter K.
Right. And if I may follow up, if I may have a self-serving follow-up, also in the 2015 session, former Representative Whitsitt and I passed a bill that required any tax credit that was passed from that day forward to have a policy purpose as part of the bill. So that with the goal of being, if you look through the tax credit report, there is often LRO says, we think that the policy purpose of this was blank. And so that was one of the things that we thought was important to have. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested, so this was 2015, so it wouldn't have had one yet necessarily. But I know I see it, I have seen it occasionally in bills, but I just wanted to point that out, that that's another part of this process as well, that it's hopefully gonna, and it makes me think, should or does that apply to tax expenditures as well? Any tax expenditures that we might pass after the date, after when that bill took effect?
Requiring the policy statement?
Mm-hmm. What is the policy goal of the tax credit or the tax expenditure?
For a number of years, even before that, on the revenue impact statements that LRO produces, we add language on there about the policy purpose, and we try to engage members and receive input on what that language should be. We take our best shot at it, provide language. I don't know that the language in the revenue impact statement is binding to anybody. But that's another good example of how this policy has been kind of morphing over time, as most of them do.
Since this slide is about, it's illustrating the issue related to no specified sunset date, has legislative council weighed in to say whether it's a good thing to always include one so that you know the intent, or it's better not to include one at all so that it's covered by this more omnibus rule about the 6-year?
I've had several conversations with them, and I'm not recalling a specific conversation, but I think the advice is to be as explicit, being more explicit is better.
Okay, thank you.
Generally speaking. So the third example is, now we get into some of those, like, so this prior example is, I would say, is pretty clear. It creates a tax credit, so that's a tax expenditure. But sometimes tax expenditures aren't, when we're stepping away from credits and we're getting to other provisions of law, it's not necessarily always clear that something is a tax expenditure. So here's something else that was passed related to the definition of a resident or non-resident. And the language that was added was here in bold, and it was added, I believe this was also a 2015 provision, where not for this language, the paragraph D there, taxpayers who fell into that category would have to file as a resident. But because of this provision, they file as a non-resident and they pay less tax. And so the Department of Revenue included that as a tax expenditure. Now, when this passed, it was actually retroactive to 2012. So when it passed in 15, it was already going to sunset at the end of 2017. So even at that point, it wasn't created from that point moving forward, so you had to 6 years. Because it was made retroactive, almost as soon as it was passed, it was scheduled to sunset. And there was nothing, because this isn't a tax credit, it gets it some of the more complicated interactions of the tax system about residents versus non-residents, it's not necessarily obvious that this is a tax expenditure. And some people could probably argue that it is not a tax expenditure and not subject to the sunset, which is where we get at who has the authority or the final say on what is or is not a tax expenditure. And then kind of building on that, is this notion of a tax base or tax expenditure and the ability of the legislature to identify the tax base. And Mazin's in the room, and this came up a lot with the transportation package as the legislature was going through and trying to define the tax base. So I just pulled out the bike tax. That seemed to be an easiest example. We'll find out if that was a good idea or bad idea for me to bring it up. So we have the language, bicycle means a vehicle that is designed to be operated on the ground, on wheels, and is propelled exclusively by human power. So if one were to argue that that's the definition of the tax base, then that would include wheelchairs as being subject to this tax, if that's the definition of the tax base. And then I think pretty quickly they realized that, so rather than modifying the definition of bicycle, they added B, bicycle does not include durable medical equipment. Okay, well, is that the creation of a tax expenditure now? No, or is the legislature just defining the tax base? It's kind of a push and pull between the legislature's ability to define the tax base and then exceptions to that tax base. And these are some of the points that DOR was making the other day as they were putting the book together. Like, okay, well, what's in or out? And I think at the end they landed on this not being a tax expenditure. And then there were even further definitions of a taxable bicycle. It means a new bicycle that has wheels of at least 26 inches in diameter and a retail sales price of 200 or more. And they might have modified that since then. But the purpose is here is just some of the discussions. And as the legislature is going through and crafting a tax base, I'm not sure that what is or is not a tax expenditure is at the forefront, especially given this was arguably a small piece of the transportation package. So I think it's fair to say there were some bigger issues going on with that package that this didn't necessarily rise to the level of, okay, wait, we need to stop and think about a tax expenditure and sunset dates and so forth. And then I just wanted to, to wrap up here and just food for thought really, would be some alternative report structures. So we have the income tax, and there are a lot of different ways to group these together or to categorize them. And a lot of folks spend time trying to figure out what's the best way to present the information so that's most useful to the committee. And so for the income tax, we have, at one level, you have connection to federal law versus Oregon statute. That it seems to be one natural bifurcation. Okay, if we've made the decision to connect to federal law, then we're including all of their tax expenditures. We can disconnect, and we have at different times over the years selectively disconnected from federal provisions. Inevitably, that discussion, though, takes on another dimension. You're not only talking about the impact of a tax expenditure and parameters, home mortgage interest deduction. The legislature may be fine with that, but perhaps the state wants different sideboards on that deduction than the feds have. So you can disconnect from that and create your own. But inevitably, when we're talking about tax expenditures that are in federal law, this connection to federal law is another dimension to that discussion that enters at some point. So maybe there's a way to separate those out. They are listed separately in the report. The next bullet there, program categorization, the statute wants each of these tax expenditures to be identified with a direct spending program. So if you're talking about human services or education, higher education, economic development, with the overarching policy or intent being through the Ways and Means process, the legislature is spending X dollars directly on economic development or on education. And then the argument here on the tax expenditure side is that the state has chosen not to collect revenue for these policies. And from that perspective, some people view them on equal footing and they should be set up side by side. It's not always easy to identify a program associated with these. I spoke to the Economic Development Committee the other day, and the list of provisions that are chalked up to economic development can be pretty long, and some of them seem to be obvious, you know, the SIP program, for example, on the property tax side, but you can get into some other ones that the connection seems a little more tenuous.
So for me, that it causes me to ask, so if it's not related to economic development, what is the purpose?
And that's been the biggest challenge in evaluating any tax expenditure, and we run into it with the tax credit report. Now, we just released our third tax credit report, so we've gone through ostensibly the full cycle of tax credits. There are one or two that haven't been included in that report because the sunset date has been moved before we got to report on them, but we've included most of them. And the biggest challenge in evaluating a policy is understanding what the intent is. So what is a tax credit supposed to do? And that really defines the the parameters, the side with the context for how to evaluate a policy. And that can be the most challenging thing.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and just hearing that, it's fascinating that the intent of a tax credit's not written when the tax credit is enabled to help future legislatures understand why and whether it's working.
And I think we're moving into a point where that's being required now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but from this point forward.
Yeah.
And the issues and having those parameters and then data collection is also a key point. So if we know what the intent of a tax expenditure is, then the assembly can design the data collection, the appropriate data collection, so that can be evaluated. It comes up a lot in economic development. You know, when does an economic development incentive become a subsidy? And ostensibly, once it achieves its purpose, maybe the tax expenditure can go away. But it really does depend on the purpose. And we have a lot where the intent seems to be to encourage this behavior or that behavior. Well, and that's never going to end. As long as it provides a tax reduction, that encouragement is always going to be there. And that may be fine for a given tax expenditure. But those get at some of the questions. And then, so for the property tax, a couple bullets I just put up there. Trying to think of different ways to talk about this. There's always the impact on the state school fund. And I don't know that the report currently includes an impact on the state school fund, if there is any, to the extent that they factor in local decisions to grant property tax exemptions, or to the extent the state requires property tax exemptions. And then geographical impact. A lot of the property tax information we get from the counties, so that could be presented perhaps on a county basis. At the same time, having some familiarity with the data, there can be challenges in reporting information on that are sometimes very rough estimates. And I guess I should say that about most of the estimates in the tax expenditure report, I think it's fair to say are orders of magnitude. I mean, when the Department of Revenue is putting these together for 370 of these, there just isn't enough time to really drill it down into the nuances. So a lot of the value is, does this tax expenditure have a $10 million impact or a $100 million impact? As opposed to, well, is it 10 or 11 or 12? It's an order of magnitude kind of thing.
Yes.
Thank you. I have a question in terms of the data that gets measured. Some of these expenditures may have laid out intent and goals, but what I think it would be good to know what data we don't capture in terms of in relation to the goals. So, for example, if we are giving a tax credit for a community garden, but our goal is to create community gardens in low-income areas, and do we measure which low-income areas did they get to? Is there health benefits? Is there health increase of health outcomes for the communities around there? What data are we capturing? Is it just those who are taking on the credits, what their economic status is, but not the outcomes of the community itself?
Usually, the most reliable information we have, Rep. Fernandez, on a tax credit would be the income tax return. That gets filed with the Department of Revenue. It's a line item on there, so we can tell you who claimed it. I mean, not by name, but by groups of taxpayers, higher income, lower income folks, possibly even where they live, some of the addresses. And by that, I mean by maybe perhaps at a city or county level, if there's enough people claiming, we run into disclosure problems there. But that's the most reliable. That doesn't get at the full benefit of the policy. So if you're going with, I believe you said community garden or something like that, then to evaluate the benefit on a neighborhood, we would need some additional information. And then the question becomes, who's responsible for collecting that information? Who's responsible for tracking it? And then we run into that issue. And that can be one of the challenges, because we can see what it's costing the state. And we can say, okay, there's a tax credit was created in 2019 for community gardens. And then once we get to look at the 2020 returns, we can see that 5,000 people claimed that credit and the state gave up $1 million or whatever it is. We may, or just from the tax return, we won't know where these community gardens are. We would need some additional data. And then that becomes a cost question. Where does that come from?
Yes.
And it would be helpful to identify those challenges as we look at future expenditures to say, here's the data we were able to capture in relation to the intent or goal. Here's the data that we're not able to. And I think that will be helpful for us to get a well-rounded picture of the expenditure and credit itself so we can evaluate its effectiveness of achieving the goal. You know, we, in terms of our general fund, we have audits and we have many more eyes looking at those expenditures and ways to capture data and have public accountability. My fear is, or I guess what I'm trying to get into is, do we have that same level of accountability and analysis on the tax expenditures?
Thank you, Chair. And to sort of build on what Rep. Hernandez was talking about, the property tax exemptions that are available are quite often by local option, right? We make an exemption available. So it seems to me that those are probably the even more difficult for us to track any sort of impact from, because it's not across the board. It's something that can be enacted in any one community. That community isn't necessarily charged with collecting and sending data to us to give us feedback on how effective it was or how ineffective it was. So it seems like as we start to discuss where I think we're headed with this, which is should we have some accountability and an automatic review process of those property tax exemptions, that if we move toward a cycle of mandatory review of exemptions, like a six-year cycle, that would force local communities to actually make a case that these exemptions are useful to them. Right now, there's no single moment when there's an impetus for actually collecting data because it's an automatic mechanism that goes forward.
And that's part of the argument behind putting a sunset mm-hmm. on these, is that it forces the issue in front of the legislature for the right. stakeholders to come forward.
Right.
Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, just to bring a little bit of perspective, the reason we have these issues before us is because a legislative body prior to us thought it was a good decision. And that's both parties have decided that. And so there is a rational reason why every one of these exists. Part of what we would need to do is go back and understand history as to why they occurred. Without getting too political, I would share that reviewing these sometimes brings up issues that may be awkward for some in the building on both sides of the aisle. And depending upon how we handle that conversation, we may have this type of audience or we may have three overfill rooms. And so I just offer that as counsel.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Noted. following up on some of the comments already, especially Rep. Hernandez's comments, when we have an expenditure through the regular legislative budgeting process, there is some department in charge of this. For example, community gardens, maybe it's housing community services, maybe it was even something under public health if it was related to making sure that we had fresh vegetables available to people. But anyway, a program is established, there's some department responsible for it, the funding goes through there, and as you pointed out, there are either performance measures designed for it or someone looks into it or it's possible to do some auditing and figure out, is this thing working? is this program worth funding? Should we reduce the funding or increase the funding? However, something like a tax credit or some other kind of a tax expenditure, that avoids all of that, because we certainly don't expect the Department of Revenue to also have a lot of staff like you would have in Human Services or Housing and Community Services or Economic Development even, who understand the issues and who could prepare analysis and reports to evaluate it. So it avoids, it, even though the idea of that tax expenditure was to support a certain activity, let's say, or provide an incentive, it's avoiding the normal agency process that we use to set up other sorts of expenditures to try to support those activities. It's I don't know how one would answer your question, because there just isn't a way to set it up unless it's perhaps through the enabling legislation that created that tax expenditure that says, and there shall also be an evaluation by such and such a department and a report to the legislature on the outcomes or effectiveness. But I don't see how we would ever expect Department of Revenue to report on that. They're reporting on the use of the expenditure, not on the outcome of the program.
That's correct, Madam Chair. A lot of the tax credits, I'm thinking very generally now, go through some sort of certification process in a state agency that is relevant to housing, energy, economic development. They have the program expertise to know which taxpayers or which projects would qualify for a tax incentive, a tax and credit that the legislature created. They would then just share that information with the Department of Revenue to know that, so that DOR knows that Jane Doe is allowed a tax credit. So when they're filing their returns, they are able to link information to know that, yeah, Jane Doe is allowed a tax credit of $2,000. And so when they process Jane's tax return, they see that amount, and yes, it's good to go. Or if Jane claimed, you know, $15,000 credit, DOR would flag that and say, well, it was only supposed to be two, that kind of information that they don't have the program expertise for housing, energy, economic development, natural resources, because they're expert, to your point, it is the processing and the auditing of tax returns. I guess I would add on the, as I've done this over the past couple of years, the data issue is always there. But it doesn't have to be an all or nothing. Sometimes small amounts of information can provide a great deal of insight. So it doesn't have to be a GIS mapping of a community garden per se. And I'd have to think about the details, because they're gonna vary from expenditure to expenditure, but sometimes small pieces of information can go a long way to broadly answering, yes, this seems to be going in the right direction, or no, it doesn't.
Representative Reschke.
Another feedback mechanism we have is when the tax credit comes up for renewal, whether somebody's advocating for it to continue or not, because they would come with data, they would come saying, this is working for us, please renew it. Or conversely, if nobody shows up, then we can make some assumptions about whether anybody's taking advantage of it or it's working for a particular community or not.
And that to that point, you step into this implicit sunset provision, yeah, and whether or not something is or is not a tax expenditure,
yeah,
or is it part of the base,
right,
for the stakeholders and the ability for stakeholder for the public to know. I'm not sure how many people in the public sit around at parties and talk about tax expenditures.
I have.
Your house, yeah.
And that's how you became chair, apparently. So.
The issue of tax base versus tax expenditure is interesting, complicated, foundational. So, Is this the sort of thing where there's one very thorough conversation and the legislature might come to a conclusion that this is what it means? Or is it something that really needs to be reviewed on a case-by-case basis and there isn't just one answer from one big, long conversation?
It's probably more incremental. I know the most recent example, I'll go back to the transportation package. And again, Mazin's here if you want more detail on that because he was involved intimately there. But as the Department of Revenue was going through and creating the tax expenditure report, and they were trying to identify tax expenditures relating to weight mile or the vehicle privilege tax, the bike tax, there were certain viewpoints where things seemed to be clearly a tax expenditure from looking at statute. But once they had a little more background on the discussions that happened in the committees establishing that policy, it became a little clear that the discussions were really how do we in statute define the tax base. And so that example I think speaks to more an incremental approach, but I don't know definitively.
Are there specific topics that ended up, I'm imagining a scenario, maybe something goes to the Department of Revenue, someone's not happy with the decision, there's an appeal, somehow it ends up getting into the court system. Have any of these recently ended up going through the court system?
No, I think we're just at the cusp of that potentially happening now. Because 2020 is really when these six-year, the implicit sunsets are first taking effect. So what would have to happen is that the Department of Revenue determined that a given policy is a tax expenditure, and there's questions about whether DOR should be doing that, the administrative agency, or the assembly should be doing that. But absent that, DOR will have to make a decision, and they're also in the room, but they'll have to make a decision about if something is a tax expenditure because they'll be issuing tax forms and directions. And if they disallow something because they feel it is a tax incentive and it had an implicit sunset, a taxpayer may disagree, and then it could start to work its way through that process. And ostensibly, that's what we'd like to avoid, is that expensive process, and get ahead of that right now.
So I'm sure the members of the committee are all very eager to help figure this out, to get ahead of the process. I'm not seeing that many enthusiastic faces, I suppose. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could we indeed ask Mazin for a couple
yes.
examples of?
Yeah, Chair Nathanson, for the record, Mazin Malik, Legislative Revenue. There are things that got into the discussions of, for example, the vehicle use tax, the tax expenditure report, Chapter 17, kind of took the idea as the vehicle modifications are a tax expenditure. So what is a vehicle modification? In House Bill 2017, we put a use tax and a privilege tax on vehicles, new vehicles sold. And the weight class, we said, goes up to 26,000 pounds. So there are a class of vehicles between 10 to 26,000 pounds. These are your tow trucks, your some of it, ambulances, things that are adjusted for disabled use, things for work, trucks, and so on. Those were not meant to be part of the use tax because you get the vehicle, it's $30,000, you put these modifications, not coming from the manufacturer, but in place where you actually do that here in Oregon. And you add $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 price tag to them. So it was clear to the committee at the time that those modifications were not meant to be part of the tax base. And it was meant to be that that vehicle, as it came from and as it sells from the manufacturer, so the cap and the chassis. Now, that is clear to us. I think the Department of Revenue, putting these things together, chose to think of it as tax expenditures. We disagree. We don't think it's a tax expenditure. And I think part of our task with the legislature is to ascertain those things and say whether we disagree or disagree. And we disagree, and they should not put on a sunset because it's just not a tax expenditure. This is not a tax expenditure that needs to be looked at such. It was never an intention of tax expenditure by the time when we put it together. It cannot be thought as such. And there are other examples where it is a tax expenditure where we don't have a choice. For example, when you cannot tax the federal government or the tribes, whether they buy a new car in Oregon or not, you can't still tax them. There is no tax that you could impose on the federal government by the state government. So that is a tax expenditure, whether we like it or not, but we cannot do anything about it. So that cannot also be put in a sunset. So there are things that are a tax expenditure, and they will come and say, suggest to you, these are in the places where we make recommendations to the committee and say, no, our recommendations is not to include it, and it is not a tax expenditure. It's not ascertain. We don't verify or certify this as such.
Madam Chair, yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that, Mazen. So your argument then is that because of the legislative intent, that is how we would get to our opinion being that was not a tax expenditure, that exemption for add-ons in that class of vehicles. Can you give an example of one that they did say was a tax expenditure that you would agree, again, based on legislative intent or your understanding of what the legislative intent was?
Well, the tax expenditure is not only, legislative intent. Remember, tax expenditures sometimes happen without the legislature wanting it to happen. And that's why we have in our revenue impact statement the box in the bottom. And it's part of the examination of any revenue impact, whether this expands, creates, or limits a tax expenditure. Mm. Yeah, because arguably when there is an intent, a clear intent by the legislature for a tax expenditure, it would say so. And it will say this tax expenditure is for the purpose of. When things do not happen that way, and it happens in a way that is not intended to be, the Legislative Revenue Office will come and say, this bill, as you have in the bottom of each revenue impact statement, this bill creates, expands, or limits a tax expenditure. So that's the purpose of that. And then, for example, when that happens, we would go to the committee passing the bill or discussing the bill and would ask them, this is a statement about the purpose of this tax expenditure you might have not wanted into law in the sense that it is in the statutes, but this is what it seems to be the intent. Is that something that you agree with? And we don't necessarily ask for a vote, but an affirmation from the committee that this tax expenditure has this purpose. And that becomes the new purpose that needs to be looked at as part of that tax expenditure purpose. So it's not necessarily the intent only. It's the tax expenditure is when it's not intended. and things do happen, just like, as I said, the federal government. So the tax is paid to another jurisdiction, for example. Tax paid to another jurisdiction between the use tax and the privilege tax is the way you design taxes. I mean, you cannot tax them both. You cannot tax it here and there. You have to have a use tax from for the things that are coming outside of Oregon or outside the state, and a privilege tax for the things that are sold inside Oregon. So when you have these two taxes operating in different ones, the minute that the one tax is not operating, it's because the other one is. But you can't see that as a tax expenditure. That's not a tax expenditure, that's a tax design. So.
Thank you. And the agency probably wants to add something.
Sure, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Mark Arst with the Department of Revenue. So I think that Chris did a great job of talking about some of the ambiguity that's out there. And I just kind of had to jump up because, I mean, we have taken the position that, particularly in the case of the vehicle add-ons for adaptive use and for industrial improvements, the big boxes that go on the back of trucks and whatnot, that when the legislature came in and exempted those, that did become a tax expenditure. And I think part of the reason that we took that position is that when the bill originally passed in 2017, those items were taxable. And then the legislature came back in 2018 and said that they would be exempt. And it may have always been the intent that that those be exempt. I don't think that anybody was necessarily ever looking to tax the adaptive changes to vehicles for disabled folks especially. But because of the timing and the fact that when the tax was originally established, it did tax those. That's how we got to the position that we were at. And so that's one of the many things that we look at when we're trying to determine whether these are and are not a tax expenditure that's subject to the implicit sunset. But, you know, Mazin's a very smart person. People can disagree. And I think Chris laid it out that what would have to happen is that it would need to go to court unless there was some kind of clarification by the legislature. And I think that this is a perfect example of one where maybe the legislature should just clarify and say there is no sunset. And then that will avoid that fight in court. It'll avoid people paying taxes on, you know, wheelchair ramps and, you know, things that you, so you can drive with your hands. I don't think that anybody's looking to charge people a tax on that. So we would just ask for the clarification. And that's why we think that this conversation is very valuable.
The value is not only for this one specific instance, but generally to help guide our work and your work in the future. Yes, Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I keep on thinking, as Chris mentioned, that these tax expenditures are kind of in, or credits are in category buckets. And so that's one way to tackle them. Another thing thought I had is, can we come up with a test, quote unquote, a list of questions that helps clearly define whether something's on this side of the fence or that side of the fence and avoid litigation going forward?
Chair Nathanson, I think if the legislature, as part of the recommendations and decision on the tax expenditures, decides that these are not and should not be put on a sunset, I think that's I would see anybody that is would be litigating that position. For example, another example, as I said, you know, the vehicles sold at an auction. These are exempt from being taxed as a privilege tax. The department sees those as the tax expenditures. Sold out at auction means they sell outside, they sell different places. This is actually interfering with, or might interfere with, interstate commerce clause. So is that something we want to argue about? I think once you say that this is not on a sunset, and the discussion goes back to this is not a tax expenditure, then it probably just ceases to be the discussion.
How difficult would it be for Legislative Revenue Office to prepare just an initial discussion paper I don't know that we will schedule another informational meeting, but to have a discussion paper ready for us, listing some of those ideas that might be included in what Representative Reschke mentioned, a test. You look at this, this, and this, and this. These are the factors that you would consider. And similarly, for Department of Revenue to provide us with what you said, the date and the timing is one of the factors you look at in determining whether something's a tax expenditure. Can you, is it easy to list for us what those criteria are that you're looking at to make those determinations? I'd like to see the committee have a list available should we get to that conversation. Representative Reschke.
Madam Chair, thank you. And again, I don't know if that's a broad list or if you get into the categories and the test is a little different because of the category. Right. So
I think we could pretty easily put something together. This has been an ongoing discussion. I mean, every biennium when DOR puts out the report, there are discussions, and I think it's just a matter of putting down in one place all of the ways of viewing it. So we can certainly put something together for it.
Thank you.
It'd be helpful.
Thank you. You have finished with your slides.
Yes.
Yes.
That last bullet point isn't very elucidating.
Any other questions?
I would just say that the list will not only be helpful for this committee and the legislature, but also helping businesses and citizens with predictability. So they can look at the tax code and go, oh, this meets the test or not, doesn't meet the test. So predictability is a key factor, I would think, in developing something like this.
Thank you. Any other comments on this topic? Thank you for the information. It was very helpful. Thank you, committee, for the discussion. We're adjourned.